We had today in the Chumash about the tests of Avram Avinu. And we were talking about what is a test? What does that mean, a test? Here's a story about a test, and you'll understand very well about what a test is. Because not only Avram Avinu gets tested, but all of us, everybody gets tested. And that's a very important thing that Hashem has in the world, are tests. Once a long time ago, there was a very great king. And a very great king has a very big, beautiful, great palace with all kinds of officers and generals and servants and all kinds of different things that people do for the king. And the king sits on his throne and takes care of king things, and the officers take care of officers' things, and the servants take care of servants' things. Each one has a job. As you understand, some of the jobs, even that the servants have, are excellent. Like to be near the king all the time, to guard his room, or be in the room of the throne and see all the important people that come to the king, and of course see the king himself and all the things that the king does, and it's so beautiful in there. That's the best job. Then there are other jobs like taking out the garbage and mopping up the floor, or staying up all night guarding the palace by the back doors, and you have to be over there all night in the dark. I mean, that's not exactly the best job. But the king had such a thing that a servant would start in the very lowest of jobs, and then the servant would be promoted, which means he would be given a chance to get a better job. He would be going up from a not such a good job to a better job and a better job and a better job until the very best servants were the closest to the king. Now, how did you get a better job if you didn't have such a good job? The king would test you. The king would give you something that you had to do that was maybe very difficult, that was not the regular kind of thing that you usually did. It was a test, a difficult thing to do. Will you do it, or maybe you're just going to give up and not do it? And the king himself would be looking at you in a secret place. And these were secret tests that even the person himself, the servant himself, or the officer, also by officers, they did not know when the king was looking at them and when the test was taking place. Because the king was doing it in a very smart and secret way. And if they would pass the test, they would get a better job. If they would not pass the test, either they would have to stay in the same job or maybe go to a lower job or maybe leave the palace completely and not be in the palace at all. And maybe they'd even have to go work in the
gas station!
And maybe they'd even have to go and work in the
To work
in the gas station, who knows? Well, the story goes like this. The king had a servant named Yisrael. Yisrael was a very good, hard-working servant, but he didn't have yet the best of jobs. And now it was time to test Yisrael to see if he was good enough to get a very, very good job, or maybe even the best job in the palace. And so the king planned a very, very interesting test for Yisrael. Just for Yisrael. The king knew his servants, and he knew how to test them. He didn't give everybody the same test. The test goes according to the person. So one day, the king calls Yisrael to his throne, and he says to Yisrael, Yisrael, you have been a very faithful, hard-working, good servant for many years in my palace. And it's time that I would like to thank you for it and give you something very special. So I'm inviting you to do this. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I would like you to be by my room of royal treasures. And Yisrael thinks to himself, oi, the room of royal treasures, That's where all the beautiful things of the king are, the silver and the gold and the diamonds and the beautiful fancy things that the king has, a treasure house that hardly anybody gets to go and even see in there. And I get to go and be there. Oh boy. Yes, be 9 o'clock exactly by the room of royal treasures, and I am going to let you go into the room of royal treasures for an hour, exactly 1 hour, and you could take whatever you want to keep for yourself. Oh, Yisrael thinks to himself, a whole hour in the king's room of royal treasures, and I get to take whatever I want for myself to keep. What a wonderful chance. What a wonderful thing. And the king says to Yisrael, he looks him right in the eye, and he says very seriously, remember, Yisrael, you only have 1 hour. And at the end of the hour, whatever you have taken is yours, but you cannot take even one more thing. And Yisrael thinks to himself, I wonder why the king is looking at me so seriously, because a whole hour is such a long time. I'm sure there are so many things that I can take in 1 hour. But the king is saying, you know, as he said, the king said, not one extra minute. Not even an extra second, and only what you took is yours, and you can't take anything more. In only 1 hour. Well, Kinalach Yisrael was very excited. He went back to the place that he stayed in the palace. He could hardly sleep. He wanted to be ready. He wanted to be on time, not even a second late. And he even brought something special to be able to take all this stuff in. I mean, a whole hour. You could take so many things, it would be more than he could fill his pockets. And he got 10 barrels, 10 like big round boxes, and he prepared them that he should be able to take them in with him, to be able to fill them with all the treasures and all the things that he would take in a whole hour. He was prepared to take so many things, 10 barrels, empty barrels. And the next morning, Yisrael wakes up bright and early, and he gets himself all ready, and he gets to the room even a little bit early, and exactly at 9 o'clock, the king comes, and he opens the door to the room of royal treasures, and he lets Yisrael in, and he says, remember, Yisrael, you only have 1 hour. And when the clock strikes 10, he pointed to the clock in the room that was ticking away and tick-tocking away. When that clock strikes 10, that's it. The time is finished. And Yisrael now is in the room with his 10 barrels, and the king closes the door. And Yisrael looks around. Oi, this is so beautiful. This is the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my whole life. On one table were bowls of diamonds. On another table were bowls of other kind of jewels. On another table were gold and silver and different fancy schmancy special things that a king has. And Yisrael was about to go now to take diamonds. And he says, one handful of diamonds will be enough to make me rich for the rest of my life. And he's going over to the first bowl of diamonds when all of a sudden Yisrael heard the most beautiful music that he's ever heard in his whole life. And Yisrael loved music. He loved to listen to music. He loved to play music. Anything musical was his greatest pleasure. And he was listening now, all of a sudden, the air of the room was filled with the most beautiful music and the most beautiful song that he's ever heard. And he couldn't move. He just stood in one place listening to the music. Now, Kinalach, this is the test. Listen closely. Way in the other part of the room, the king had put a musician, the best musician in the kingdom, that the king had hired for this, because this was the test. And the king was peeking in a secret place in the wall, that he could see Yisrael and everything that he's doing, and this is the test. Is Yisrael going to listen to the music and forget about the job that he has for this hour, the chance that he has for this hour, the big chance to take anything that he wants from the room of royal treasures? Is he going to get carried away and distracted by the music, which was very beautiful and so beautiful? You know, when you listen to beautiful music, you really can't do anything else. You just have to sit there and listen to it. Stam, regular music, you can have in the background. Like you go to a market sometimes or an elevator, there's music playing. And, you know, it's like in the background, so you can do whatever you want. But really special, beautiful music has such an effect on a person that they just stop what they're doing and they listen to the music. And that's exactly what Yisrael was doing. He stopped and was listening to the music. And the song went on for 10 minutes. That means that 10 minutes went by from the 60 minutes. How many minutes are left? 50 minutes are left. And the song stopped, and Yisrael thinks to himself, "Oi, that music was so beautiful. Uh-oh, I better get busy." And he looks at the clock. 10 minutes went by. I have 50 minutes left. Well, that's still a long time. There's a lot of there are a lot of things that I can take in 50 minutes. I don't need a whole hour. And he started to reach for the diamonds when all of a sudden, another song started. That was even more beautiful than the first song. And maybe even the musician was playing a different instrument. He could play different instruments. Oh, it was so beautiful. And Yisrael thinks to himself, I'm just going to listen to this one more song because it's so gorgeous and beautiful. And that song was also 10 minutes long. Another 10 minutes went by. So instead of 50 minutes being left, there are 40 minutes left. And Yisrael says to himself, Still, 40 minutes is a very long time. No problem. And he starts to go to get some diamonds in Kinnelach. An even more beautiful song started. Now you can imagine that this musician was so good and he could play exactly the beautiful songs that Yisrael loved to hear because the king knew about these songs. The king knew all about his servants and exactly what they loved and which kinds of things they loved the most. And he had planned this musician to play exactly Yisrael's most favorite songs with exactly the kinds of instruments he loved to listen to. The time went on and on. Each time he forgot about what he's supposed to do. And he kept telling himself, I have plenty of time, I have plenty of time, until all of a sudden, ding, ding, ding. What's happening? What is that?
Clock.
The clock is going. Uh-oh. Is it 10 o'clock already? You mean the whole hour flew by? And Yisrael says, and I didn't even take one thing? It couldn't be. And he says, yes, it is. The clock is striking 10. And all of a sudden, the king comes in the room. Okay, Yisrael, time is up. What do you mean, but? You had a whole hour in here. Let's see how much you took. The king looks in the barrels. How come they're empty? You must have in your pockets. Your pockets are empty. King, I was listening to the music. Can I take one more diamond? King, can I take one diamond, please? No, I'm sorry. That was exactly the rule. When the clock strikes 10, you can't take anything else. The time is up. One little diamond. Sorry. And Kinnelach Yisrael went out of the room and he didn't take a thing. Now, this is a story about a chance. Yisrael had a chance. He had a chance to do something very great. But there was a test. Something to take him away from doing what he was supposed to do. What he should have done was what? He should have said, look, the music is beautiful, but I have plenty of time for music later. Now is not the time for music. Now is the time to do a special thing that I only can do now. And he should have gotten busy. He could have taken so many diamonds and silver and gold and everything. He could have had musicians for the rest of his life, but not in that hour. Later. Did Yisrael pass the test or he did not pass the test? He did not pass the test. Do you think he got the better job or he didn't get the better job? Well, either he didn't get the better job or he was stuck taking out the garbage from the palace the whole time because he did not pass the test. And the king was looking at him the whole time. He should have done what he's supposed to do and not get carried away. Now, this is a story not just about Yisrael, who's some servant in the king's palace. This is about every Jew, every Yid. Do you know what your neshama is called, every neshama? One of the names of the neshama is Yisrael. One of the names of every Yid is Yisrael. This is a story about you. You're Yisrael. This is a story about you and me and every Yid. We are Yisrael. Our neshama has the name Yisrael. It's a story about us. And do you know who's the king? Who do you think is the king in this story? Who's the king?
Hashem!
Hashem is the king. And the room of royal treasures, Kinalach, is the world we live in, that Hashem puts us in here for a special time, only a very short time. And Hashem puts the neshama into this world, and now we have a chance for diamonds and gold and jewels. Do you know what the diamonds and gold and jewels and the main thing?
Torah mitzvah.
Learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. Every word of Torah is like a diamond, and every mitzvah is like a jewel. But Kinalach, shh. At the same time that we know we have this important job to do in the world, learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, we also have the music playing that tries to take us away from the mitzvahs. What is the music?
The Yetzahara.
The Yetzahara has all kinds of tricks to get us to Chas V'Shalom, forget about the main thing that we're supposed to do, and listen to the Yetzahara. So, what we have to do to learn from this story and know that we have a chance now to do the main thing, and that's Torah mitzvahs. There's play time and resting time and recess time, which is fine for music and playing, and that helps us to go on. But when that siddur is open and it's time to daven, that's the room of royal treasures time for davening. It's time to chaperein every word of davening. And then when the chumash is open and it's time to learn chumash, that's the time that you're in the room of royal treasures for chumash, and you have to use that time for learning and not just playing around. And when it's time to do a mitzvah, you should be involved in the mitzvah and don't just get, you know, involved in something else. So, the door opens, we're in the room of royal treasures, and let's do the main thing. And during the play time and the recess time, that's the time to play and to relax. When we have a chance for Torah mitzvahs, let's use that time in a smart, good way. Now, first there was the Baal Shem Tov, who was the beginning of, he was the beginning of Chassidus, and then there came the Mezitzer Magid. Between the Mezitzer Magid and the Alter Rebbe was a great tzaddik named Reb Menachem Mendel Haradoker. Reb Menachem Mendel from Haradok. Now, he moved with a group of Chassidim to Eretz Yisrael, because he wanted to live and learn and daven and do mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. He was very halakhic tzaddik. Now, one day in Eretz Yisrael, he was in his room. He was learning in his room in his house. And all of a sudden, outside, somebody started to blow the shofar. Now, this was in Yerushalayim, on Har HaZeisim, the Mountain of Olives is called over there. You can see that near where the Beis HaMikdash used to be. There are a lot of graves, kfarim over there. It's a halakha place where a lot of halakha tzaddikim are buried. And somebody started blowing the shofar on top of Har HaZeisim, in Yerushalayim, and people in the street said, "Oi, Mashiach must be here. Mashiach must be here." Because it says when Mashiach is here, there's going to be a shofar on Har HaZeisim. And that's going to be a sign that Mashiach is here. Oi, it must be that Mashiach is here. And they came to tell Rabbi Nachum Mendel HaRadoker, "It must be Mashiach is here. There's a shofar blowing on Har HaZeisim." Rabbi Nachum Mendel HaRadoker closed the sefer. He went over to the window. He stuck his head out the window and he starts to smell. He starts to smell the air. He turns around and he says to the people, "No, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, Mashiach is not here yet. Mashiach has not arrived yet." And he went back to his sefer and he started to learn. Now, the question is this, Kenalach. Rabbi Nachum Mendel HaRadoker knew to smell the air to see if Mashiach is here or not. Because, like we just said, when Mashiach is going to come, there's going to be this, the air of Mashiach. Like we learned about the teva. Inside of the teva was a special kind of an air. And Rabbi Nachum Mendel knew that the sign of Mashiach is here or not has that air come, the air of Mashiach. Now the question is though, if he was going to tell by the smell of the air, if Mashiach is here or not, where is the air? Where? Of course outside is air. But what about in his room? Isn't there air in his room? And where does the air in his room come from? I mean, from the outside, right? I mean, you know, you open up the window, air comes in. So the question is, if he's going to tell by smelling the air, why does he have to get up from his chair to smell the air and go outside somewhere over there by the window and stick his head out the window? He could just sit in his room and smell the air. Why does he have to go outside to smell the air outside? And the answer is this, Kinalach, that by Rabbi Nachum Mendel HaRadoker in his room was already the air of Mashiach. Because by big tzaddikim, by helika tzaddikim, the air of Mashiach is by them all the time. They're always holding by Mashiach. So by smelling the air in his own room, he would have smelled the air of Mashiach because it's always there. Even if somebody didn't blow the shofar on Har HaZeisim. By a tzaddik, he's always living by the level of Mashiach, by the air of Mashiach. Only he had to go outside. To smell outside, has Mashiach arrived for the rest of the world yet? Is the air of Mashiach outside? That's why he had to go out the window. And he smelled out the window. Of course, this is not a gashmiistic smell of the nose. It's something baruchnius. It's something, a halakha thing for the neshama. And he saw that outside was not the air of Mashiach. Now there's another story, similar, that in the cold, freezing air of Poland during Sukkot time, even during Sukkot, it was freezing cold and it's icy and snowy sometimes in the Sukkah. And one time there was a gathering of Chassidim in a Sukkah, and a Halakha Rebbe, a Tzaddik, was the Belzer Rebbe, came out onto the sukkah. The rest of the Hasidim were sitting in fur coats and fur hats and gloves, and they were shivering. It was freezing cold. And the Rebbe came out onto the sukkah in the ice and the snow. He came out with a regular thin kapata, thin coat. He didn't have gloves, and he didn't have a coat, a thick coat. He didn't have a thick hat with a scarf. And he came out and he sat down just like he was comfortable. He didn't feel... You could see, he didn't feel the cold. And the rest of the Hasidim were freezing. And they asked him, "Rebbe, how could it be that you come out just in a regular thin kapata and you're not freezing?" You know what he answered them?
"Because he's a tzaddik."
Okay. And by a tzaddik, the air is different. By a tzaddik, what's around the tzaddik is different than a regular person. Not only Baruchnius, even Megashmius. But you know what he told them? He said that in the sukkah is the heir of Eretz Yisrael. He says, it says in Sfarim that in a sukkah is the heir of Eretz Yisrael. Now, he was on the Madrega to feel it. He could mamash feel it, begashmias, just like in Eretz Yisrael. It's warm, it's nice. In the sukkah here in Poland by the Belzer Rebbe was the heir of Eretz Yisrael. He came out and he felt mamash, he was in Eretz Yisrael. Now, of course, the other Hasidim did not feel it, mamash begashmias. They were shivering in their coats. He was on such a level that he was holding higher than what other people felt, and he could feel the heir of Eretz Yisrael in his sukkah. Now, once in a while, I tell you a story because I'm teaching a certain thing, and then another story teaches you the same thing a little bit differently, and by both stories, you can learn one thing very clearly. Now, I'll tell you a story about a story inside of a story. Sometimes I tell a story inside of a story. Here's a story about a story inside of a story. Now, this is true. I know a painter. Not that he paints a house or he paints buildings, but he paints paintings. And many painters, what they do, they look at something and they copy it. They paint what they see. So sometimes they go to the botanic gardens and they paint a tree or a flower or something. Or sometimes they paint something else they're looking at. Yes. This particular painter liked to paint a room, a still room, things in a room. Or even walls and windows and cabinets. Or shelves. What he liked to do was make a scene of a room. That's what he liked to do. And one time he told me, this is a true story I'm telling you, and I learned something interesting from it. He told me that he had an art show where you go to a place and you show your paintings and people go to look and maybe they even buy one if they like it. Right. So I asked him, oh, and he said, I was showing 10 paintings at the art show. 10 paintings that I had worked on. So I asked him, what were the 10 paintings about? So he said, well, the 10 paintings were about a room. I like to paint what a room looks like. It's kind of like almost like a picture of a room. It's not exactly a photograph, you know. So he said, I had 10 paintings of a room. So I said, you mean you had 10 different rooms, 10 different paintings of 10 different rooms? He said, no. All of them were exactly about the same room. Now, I didn't see the paintings, but I asked him, I don't understand. You mean you painted the same thing over 10 times in 10 different paintings? He says, yeah. He says, well, I mean, I said, didn't they look the same? He says, to me, they look very much different, but they were all exactly of the same thing. The same door and the same wall and the same shelves and the same things, the same lights, whatever's in the room. He said, exactly the same thing. So I said, I couldn't understand. Wouldn't it be better if you go and paint 10 different rooms? Then you'll have 10 different paintings of 10 different things. He says, no, uh-uh. It's much better to do 10 different paintings about the same thing. Because then each painting brings out more of the same thing. It's much a better thing for the artist to make 10 paintings of the same thing than 10 different paintings. Now, I learned something very interesting about that. Because, you know, there's a saying in Chassidus, what is better to learn? You know, a mimer, you know what a mimer is, right? A mimer is a Chassidic idea. Many times it's a few pages long. What's better, to learn 40 different mimarim or one mimer 40 times? What do you think is better, to learn 40 different mimarim or one mimer 40 different times? Okay. Why do you think it's better to learn one mimer 40 different times? Come here and tell me.
You know the mimer better.
Okay, very good. Each time you learn it, over and over, you get deeper into it, you understand it more, you see it from a different side, a different way. And I'm telling you, when you learn the same thing over and over again, it means much more, becomes more of a part.